This is the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on www.prn.fm. This radio presentation replays my weekly TV show, Refounding America with Peter R. Breggin, MD, which can be watched on Brighteon.tv, and it's available on Roku. I interview guests who are heroes and pioneers in confronting the global predators who are behind COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccines, corrupt public health and medicine, global warming, the Great Reset, and other justifications for destroying the Western democracies. They are stealing our countries, our freedoms, our dignity and hope, and our jobs and our savings. For documentation of this worldwide tragedy, read our new book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, by Peter and Ginger Breggin. Together, my guests and I explore what is happening and what we each can do to refound America and inspire the world. Thank you for your courage in facing these challenges and standing up for liberty. Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Audience, I have a treat for you. It's a treat for me. Dr. Stephanie Senna from MIT. I went to Harvard. She was a little distance away in Cambridge at MIT. I always figured the MIT people were smarter than the Harvard people. I think that history is bearing that out in many ways, for better and worse. We are going to talk about her special interest in DNA and RNA vaccines. But we're also going to get into the Ukraine. I mean, the Ukraine is turning out to be a murky, nasty place, much more complicated than the warriors of the West would want us to believe. We're going to be looking into the labs in the Ukraine that are tied into the whole global predator system, the relationships of Zelensky to the global predators. We're going to be talking about the threats he's made that have almost made it necessary for the invasion. You are looking at Dr. Stephanie Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F. Ginger and I have followed her for a while. It's just a treasure to have her on screen and to be looking at her and talking to her ahead of time. She's a research scientist at MIT. She's got a degree in biology first from there, and then she got a PhD in electrical engineering and computer science, also from MIT. You can't be any smarter than that. And it's a particularly exciting to have her on because all of her smarts are exactly the kind I don't have. I mean, I was majoring in American history and literature, an honors program at Harvard before I went pre-med. And she has all kinds of different interests and a book. Her book out last year is Toxic Legacy, How the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and the Environment. I want her to be able to talk a little about that or a lot. But we've got to hold it up some more. Let me see that again. I missed it as I was looking down here. Now, that's really good. All right, glad to get that up. And you can get that, of course, online at Amazon and other places. The same places you can get our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. In addition, you can get our book directly from us at a discount on wearetheprey.com, wearetheprey.com. So I want to cover a bunch of things that have been happening today, and I want to get Stephanie's impression on all of this as well. We now know that under the Obama administration, that eight labs, at least some of them, the next to highest, level three labs, were established in the Ukraine. And I'm looking at the map of that right now. I don't know if that's at all visible. The map, look at all those triangles on that map. And those are from research by Robert W. Malone, all along the Watchtower. I think you can pull it up and get it by Googling it. And two of these bio labs admittedly making very serious pathogens are quite near the border. On this map, you can't tell which border they're on, so must be very, very close. One of them is near Belarus. One of them is down south by the Black Sea. It is hard to imagine anything more threatening that the U.S. under Obama could have done than to put these bio labs right next to Russia. Not only is there, of course, the danger of purposeful release across the border by a rogue regime, and we must say that Ukraine has not been the most stable place in the world. They had a coup in 2014. So, I mean, just what in the world was going on in their minds? Level three is really next to the highest level, and they do around the world work with all these pathogens. And even without malintentions, these are dangerous because these labs leak all the time. If you read our book, COVID-19 and Global Predators, you'll find out that there have been seven and probably eight leaks of SARS-CoV viruses, literally SARS-CoV viruses, from China and two other places, Taiwan and Singapore, four of them at least from China, maybe more, really could be six from China, from the labs, accidentally documented by the World Health Organization. So we're looking at a great threat that was made against Russia, and we're learning more and more now about
Zelensky.
Zelensky, thank you, thank you. And we're learning more and more about him. He's a global predator, folks. His hero is Trudeau. He's a member of Klaus Schwab's WEF, the World Economic Fund, better known to most people as Davos. These are a big chunk of the people behind the events of COVID-19. One of the things we're learning now, and in a minute I want to turn this back to Stephanie to get her reactions, and we'll just all talk about it. Nobody's a real big expert on this right now, as far as I know. We just have to all talk about it. But our book is not just about COVID-19. It's about what's going on right now, because it's about the global predators. And if you see the people who are making this war happen from NATO and from the EU and from Joe Biden just the whole bunch of them, they are people who thrive on war and conflict, and they don't care about death, because almost uniformly, this is hard to say, I couldn't have said things like this 2 years ago. Boy, am I wiser and more deeply and sadly knowledgeable about what goes on in the world, but they value death. That death to them is not even collateral damage, it's a good thing. They think there are too many people. And so with those opening statements, Dr. Stephanie Senoff, so good to have you here.
Thank you, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
What are your thoughts about all of this? I know you don't think you're an expert on this, and I'm an expert on the global predators, but not on this, all these political stuff going on, just
Right.
learning.
Well, I have learned to always suspect whatever the mainstream media says. And so when this war started getting going, I was puzzled. It's happened with everything, with COVID that's happened in the last couple of years. You know, is it lab origin? Is it natural? How do you find out? And you get this information from both sides and you have to sort it out yourself. And it's a difficult process. And the same thing now with the Ukraine war. I don't trust our media, informants to be telling us the truth about what's really going on. And so I'm always trying to find additional sources of information. And I have also read about these biolabs that are set up in Ukraine near the Russian border. And certainly, you know, it reminds me of the Cuban Missile Crisis that happened back when Kennedy, back in the early days of our country, well, many years ago, 50 years ago, probably, with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And
we were terrified
that we had about Cuba getting delivered in missiles from Russia that was going to arm a country very near our borders with the potential to attack us. And you know, we had to react, and we reacted firmly, and we managed to keep the missiles out from Russia. And this is, I think, a reverse situation where we've been. Gradually, you know, the West has been trying to get Ukraine to be more and more on the side of the West and more against Russia, and certainly trying to get them into the EU and into NATO, you know, and all of this that's going on is a threat to Russia, to see the West encroaching so closely upon their border. And so it makes sense to me that Russia would feel the need to do something to stop this process, especially with these bioweapons, which could be extremely dangerous if let loose.
And you know, Zelensky sounds like was at least as much, and maybe more of a loose cannon than the Russian leadership. I mean, threatening them with his going into NATO, saying he wanted atomic weapons or NATO to protect him. There's even, and I don't have proof of this, but there's even discussion of whether some of the neighboring states recognized by Russia, smaller states, whether he was shelling them. So Zelensky is a problem, a serious problem in the way he's been whipping up fear. And you wonder if he didn't know what he was doing, or whether this is what maybe his masters at the World Economic Forum, which is a big chunk of Bill Gates and of the UN. He's very close to the UN. And maybe what they've been thinking about doing. Do you have any more thoughts about that, or do you want to move on to talking about the DNA, RNA, and the stuff that you know as much or more about than anybody else?
I certainly feel more comfortable in that other space. I'm not terribly informed about Ukraine's history. I'm just learning now, and it's it has a complex background of apparently never often being not autonomous. So it's unusual for Ukraine to be an autonomous country from what I'm hearing. I'm still trying to figure things out there, but I don't pretend to know what the entire story, and I know it's complicated. And you can view it from many different sides and reach different kinds of conclusions. And certainly our government would like us to believe that we're the good guys and Russia's the bad guys, but I just don't see it that simply.
No, more and more I'm not seeing it that simply at all. And if I were thinking about these things and if on a higher political level and had some influence, I would want all those labs closed down. What are we giving a rogue type regime the ability to make biological weapons? That's crazy.
Of course, I'd like all the labs, period, to be folded. I mean, I think this is what we're... biology is... biotechnology has gotten way out of hand, in my opinion. And they're moving in a direction that I think threatens even, certainly, human life and possibly even all life on Earth. I feel like they're mucking around, playing God in ways that they should have no business doing, and they don't understand the potential consequences of the things that they're inventing in biotech. And I think they feel very godlike. They feel like they can control life, and they have great vision for what can happen. And I think actually the messenger RNA vaccines are a major part of this global predator agenda. I think that the pharmaceutical industry, of course, is closely tied to all of that. And the pharmaceutical industry sees these vaccines as a window into a huge opportunity to market all kinds of mRNA-based technology drugs that they hope will be able to treat all kinds of diseases. And they needed a way to get past the regulatory process because these things turn out to be toxic. And the only way they could think to do that was to have an emergency, declare an emergency that allows you to skip some steps in the evaluation process, to get it out the door, to get people to accept it, and then to be able to roll out all kinds of new mRNA-based vaccines that can supposedly treat various diseases. I think that's where we're headed, including mRNA vaccines for the flu and for all these other viruses. I suspect that we're going to see these rolling out in the future, unless what I think we need to do is recognize that it's toxic and it's not going to work.
Yes, I'd love to just have you keep talking more about these issues. One of the questions that comes up a lot that I'm asked and I don't have good answers for is, setting aside even the high death rates now, the sterilization of men and women, the neurological disorders, which we will get into today because you're an expert on it. I mean, my impression is that it's possible, and it's more scary maybe than all the rest of the stuff, that, you know, with the reverse transferase, right, if I'm saying it correctly, we could be changing our DNA. Yes. And inside are the nuclei of our cells and making us into truly, I'm already calling it GMO human beings, but truly GMO human beings. Would you jump into that for us?
Definitely, yes. And in fact, I wrote a paper together with Dr. Greg Nye. It was published last May. And I have a title here, Worse Than the Disease, Some Possible Unintended Consequences of the Messenger RNA Vaccines Against COVID-19. We published that last May, peer-reviewed paper. And in that paper, we had a section that described our suspicion that it could get converted into DNA. And at that time, you know, we didn't have much knowledge, but we were working from what we read from the research literature about this LINE1, line one, which is a very unusual part of DNA. Actually, 17% of our DNA is made up of these things called lines and signs. And they are a very strange component of the DNA, not very well understood, but they do know, and they're usually dormant, but under stress conditions, the cells will activate these things. And what they can do is they have a whole setup that makes enzymes that allow the RNA to get converted back into DNA. And the whole thing in biology, the whole, you know, central theory of biology is DNA goes to RNA goes to protein. You probably know about that. The basic premise of the whole genome, the genetic code, is you take the DNA, you copy it to the RNA then copies it and makes the amino acids, assembles the amino acids into proteins. And the idea that it goes in reverse was sort of not on the table originally. And then they discovered these retroviruses that in fact can turn RNA back into DNA. And then later they found out, oh my God, humans have also these same enzymes that can turn RNA into DNA. Originally they didn't think we did. This is all fairly recent that they figured these things out. We have those enzymes too. They're usually suppressed. And so so those enzymes are activated only in certain cells, and in particular in these stem cells in the bone marrow, cancer cells, and the germline, the sperm, for example, the sperm, and I think also the eggs, but the sperm definitely expressed line one, and the sperm are able to take foreign messenger RNA, which is what these vaccines deliver, take it in, convert it to DNA, and they create these plasmids. These are little circular, it's not part of, not integrated into their nuclear DNA, but just separate little pellets that contain the DNA that they translated. They release them at the time of fertilization, and the egg, the fertilized egg, takes them up, and those can become a permanent aspect of that child for the rest of its life, that they will have these little plasmids containing, if this happens with the messenger RNA vaccine, the offspring will have these plasmids that are able to make spike protein for the rest of their lives, and they can pass it on to their children. So that is really quite disturbing. We wrote about that in our paper because we found this paper from 2010 that talked about all of that long before COVID-19 vaccines were invented. They were showing that these sperm are able to do that. And now we have this brand new paper, which came out after the one Greg and I wrote, that shows that it happens in human liver cells. So they had, and these are liver cancer cells. Again, cancer, because cancer already expresses line one, that gets you partway there. But what they showed was when those cancer cells were made to produce spike protein from essentially the messenger RNA vaccine, they upregulated their line one, they activated it, so they made more. They already were making some, they made more. And they took that line one and used it to turn the RNA into DNA. And then they saw that there was the DNA as well, so they confirmed that this was happening. Now, they were not able to prove that it actually got into the human genome. So that was a question mark. But they saw that it could do it and that it did it in these human cells grown in culture. And that is quite a shocker. I mean, that paper has just come out and I'm all over it. We're already writing another paper based on that, which is not yet complete, but about ready to submit. So that's very, very exciting. And some MIT researchers had also found these strange combinations of human DNA and spike protein joined together in a study that they did in vitro as well. So there's a lot of evidence, or I think they might have even gotten it from humans who had been exposed to the disease. I forget the details on that one, but that was a paper that came out from MIT that I think had already come out by the time Greg and I wrote our paper and we talked about it.
Yeah, I'm remembering a paper that said that COVID-19 could, through these, am I saying it right, the reverse transferase?
Reverse transcription.
Transcription.
Yeah, and they're called transposons. Transposons is another term for these things that do that.
Yes, and that the disease itself was doing the reverse transcription and causing changes in the genome, that is, in the DNA actually inside the cells and also...
Yeah, they find these fragments and I had the word and I lost it again. They're combos of human DNA and DNA that came from the virus.
Stuck
together.
So maybe just, we have before our break, this is going fast because your information is so important. Just summarize again for folks, maybe starting with the, all right, you get the vaccine and what the vaccine does. And then when it transforms the RNA to make protein and so on, what happens that actually can change your genome and the genome of your offspring? Maybe just try to give that a real simple 3-minute summary.
because we haven't confirmed all of that, although the evidence is there from the sperm, yeah. From the study from the sperm from 2010, which showed exactly that. In the study of the sperm exposed to foreign messenger RNA. It wasn't the spike protein, but it was some other foreign messenger RNA. So that's the only difference there. The sperm, and in fact, we know that the vaccine makes its way into the testicles because we see swollen testicles is one of the side effects that men experience when they get the vaccine. So I think the RNA is going into the testicles and that would then allow the sperm to take it up and convert it into DNA, and then to release it at the time of fertilization, which is what they do with these plasmids, they release them. And it's interesting because it is a way to somehow transfer genetic material to the egg. You can think about what that means in terms of evolution, because I think that's probably a very interesting evolutionary process that takes place for genetic change in response to stress. And so I think I've always believed that any organism, any species will change more quickly. Genetic mutations will happen more quickly under conditions of stress. And this would be a mechanism by which that would be true because you'll have these line ones getting activated, you're getting this DNA conversion. And in fact, I think the whole process of evolution involves this step of DNA for human DNA. DNA goes to RNA. RNA is where you get a lot more mutations. The mutation, RNA is much less stable than DNA in terms of the copying the code. So when you go to RNA and then you make errors and then you bring it back into DNA, you've introduced genetic change, which can happen under conditions of stress because the species as a whole is looking for some change to help as a solution to solve the problem that it's seeing.
Now, we know that the ovaries are particularly prone to invasion by the spike protein. I think that's correct. And do we know anything about the risk that the ovaries are at for being genetically transformed?
Yes, now I haven't read anything about the eggs and whether they can do this. It does look to me like the sperm are more the agent of evolution than the eggs are. The eggs are sort of the more stable half of the joining up, and the sperm are the ones that are kind of creating change. So I suspect it's more through the sperm that this is happening. However, the ovaries are being infected with the vaccine. It was shown in a Japanese study that was commissioned by Pfizer. Japan requested Pfizer to do this study, which was quite interesting because it showed where the mRNA ends up. And I've wondered that immediately. When Greg and I wrote our paper, I dug into the history trying to figure out where does this stuff go when you inject
it. 5 seconds. Hello again. This is Dr. Peter Breggin, a psychiatrist, which is a very bad credential in my opinion since it's a fraudulent profession. And one of the things I was interested in, which made me very proud, actually, is Dr. Stephanie Seneff actually had read my work on critical of psychiatry and the medications. I'm glad I remembered to bring that up because I'm very proud of that. When did you come across my work, my original work?
A long time ago. I actually was interested in drugs and the toxicity of drugs, pharma drugs, for a long time. I was particularly concerned about statin drugs, which I feel are a scam. And but also,
by the way, folks, I will say that too. They're a scam.
You agree with that? Yes.
Oh yeah, I would not take statin drugs unless you have maybe a 500 instead of a 200 cholesterol. Maybe.
Yeah, it's pretty clear to me that cholesterol is not what's causing heart disease, and they've really made that up. And actually, cholesterol is vital for your health and vital for your brain health. And so the statin drugs affect your thinking, you know, really mess up your brain. But the psych drugs is another one that I've been quite interested in, and I've been aware of myself of the toxicity of those drugs and really devastating what they can do. And and how much this industry, you know, pushes people to take the drugs to help heal psychological problems, which is really...
we're seeing more and more how the work we did together for 40 years, and then we were separate and working, and I've been working on this kind of thing for probably 60 years of my 85, and since college, in college, and so much of what we've been looking at was a prelude to COVID-19. Mm-hmm. We went as deep as the drug companies and the FDA and the collusion, but I never imagined the global predators that came out. They were like monsters flying out of caves to get Donald Trump because he was anti-globalist, and they just made themselves known, and they got arrogant and so able to really dive into them, Ginger and I, this time the way we weren't before.
And so, others, of course, like Dr. Mercola, have also been on a similar journey, and they were able to see through what's going on as well.
Yes, that's very, very, very true. He's been terrific, very supportive of our work. I mean, he's doing great work. I was going to say, when I just ran out of time, that I can imagine a time from what you're saying, Dr. Seneff, that I think I'm going to call you Dr. Seneff. My level of respect for you is I'm usually first name, but not today. So, Dr. Seneff, from what you're saying is that I can imagine women within a few years demanding of any man that they raised to have children with to have a non-vaccine passport, a demonstration that they have not been vaccinated.
I know. That's really a good point. I would be worried about that myself, for sure, if I were young. I've wondered about the situation that young people are facing today. And of course, they've already had a lot of problems with infertility coming in the past 20 years because of all the toxic chemicals they were exposed to. One of them is glyphosate. It definitely disrupts fertility. And we have a crisis looming, I think. We have so many fertility clinics that are flourishing around, the infertility clinics that are flourishing around the country because of people who are unable to conceive naturally. And that's going to get, I think, a lot worse following these COVID-19 vaccines. Because when you think about this mRNA making its way into the ovaries, causing the immune cells in the ovaries to start expressing spike protein, which is extremely toxic, and then causing this inflammatory reaction in the ovaries. That's going to cause all kinds of trouble for the eggs, yes. I would think. Damage the eggs. I mean, I can't imagine it doesn't.
We know it doesn't. I mean, they found a fairly high percentage in animals, and they went ahead anyway.
Yeah.
So we know. We know it's happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going into the adrenal glands, the ovaries, the spleen in particular gets the highest level, and that's been of interest to me, and I've been focused on the spleen, and then also the liver. The liver is very toxic to the liver, and I'm seeing the evidence from the vaccine adverse event reporting system. There's a lot of data in there that you can analyze, and of course that system has a lot of flaws. You know, you probably know about VARS and how it's vastly underreported. Many people get reactions, even that they know the vaccine or they really highly think the vaccine caused the reaction, but they don't bother to report it. But also that they aren't even aware that the vaccine caused the reaction. Right. So they don't think to report it because it doesn't occur to them the vaccine could cause something like that.
Well, nowadays it's even worse because they're really afraid to report them. Because there's such pressure coming down from above, do not do anything to make people vaccine uneasy in some way. I mean,
right,
such
I know there's
pressure.
So much suppression of the information. About
yes,
the
so the docs are afraid to even report anything. And you know, I still do legal work, but I've done over 100 legal cases in court where I've been approved in the U.S. and Canada, state and federal courts, and a lot of my cases had to do with the reporting system to the FDA. And it's out of hundreds, and of course, I was in court over 100 times, but I mean, it could be 1,000 cases because, you know, most of my cases got settled, didn't go to court. And I never, in all my cases of doctors and drug companies taking actions that caused death from suicide, deaths from violence, psychosis, I never saw once a doctor report them.
Interesting.
And the only time I ever saw a drug company report them was Salve reporting, the distributor of Luvox, reported on the Columbine shootings because it was so obvious, because the coroner had said that the young shooter had Luvox in his blood. That's an antidepressant, folks. That's very much like Prozac, and. Other than that one from Salve, in which they had to because it was a public health issue that everybody knew about, I've never mm-hmm. seen the drug companies or doctors report. And estimates suggest that probably for every important report to the FDA or the CDC, there are probably 100 other non-reports. Other studies, say, well, maybe 10 more or other, but it's nearer in most of the research, like 1 out of 100 are being reported. So if we have 30,000 deaths reported at the CDC.
Times 100.
Think about it, folks. It's a disaster. I want you to continue, though. Talk some more about the neurological disorders or whatever else you want to share with us.
Right.
And we've got 14 minutes, and I'd like you to do most just kind of relax and talk about what you know about these adverse effects.
Okay, well, what I would focus on then is the spleen and what happens next after the immune cells. Basically, the immune cells come into the muscle. The arm, it gets injected in the muscle. The muscle cells cry out for help. The immune cells come in, and then the immune cells take up the vaccine. Now, that's already different from the virus because the immune cells don't have the ACE2 receptor, which is how the virus gets in. So they can't be infected with the virus, whereas they readily take up the mRNA in the vaccines, which is, looks like a lipid particle. It looks like an LDL particle. So they get fooled and they take it up. Then they start making spike protein. And then they're aware that they're in big trouble because they're making this toxic protein, exposing it on their surface. And the only thing they can think to do is to rush into the lymph system and expose the B cells and T cells so that you can get those antibodies. So it's a machine that is perfectly designed to generate a very strong antibody response to the spike protein. That's their goal, and they did it very, very well. I will hand that to them. They did it well. Of course, having a very high antibody response to spike protein is not necessarily a good thing. When you get sick with COVID, most people Anyone who has a mild disease develops very few antibodies to spike protein. It's only the ones that have extreme, you know, extremely strong reaction to COVID-19 that end up with these sky-high antibody responses that you get typically from the vaccine. The vaccine simulates severe disease, and that's because it bypasses all the normal channels. It bypasses the mucosa of the lungs. It gets past the mucosal barrier, gets past the vascular barrier of the blood, you know, because it's injected into the muscle all the way past all those barriers. And the immune system is quite confused because it's all of a sudden these muscle cells are producing this toxic protein out of nowhere. And there's no virus because they've designed the messenger RNA to look like a human RNA molecule. They've made a lot of changes to the RNA itself, so it doesn't look like that virus RNA. It completely fools the system. So the immune cells, you know, have never seen anything like this before, where all of a sudden these muscle cells are making this toxic protein. And then when they get involved, they come in, they also start making the protein. They can't stop themselves from doing it because of the way they've engineered the messenger RNA. So these immune cells rush into the lymph system, and they travel from the lymph system over to the spleen, and they end up in the highest, among the organs, the highest concentrations were found in the spleen, with the ovaries being second. So that's also really bad, that it's going into the ovaries, the spleen, and then the liver. And as I said, it's very toxic to the liver, but it's also very toxic to the spleen. And the spleen is where you have these germinal centers where these antibodies are made. So it's doing a great job of making all these antibodies in response to all this spike protein. But in the meantime, what happens is that these immune cells have to get rid of the spike protein that they're making because it's toxic. And what they do is they package it up into these little particles called exosomes. And they release those into the circulation. They release these exosomes from the immune cells that are making the spike protein without being able to stop. And those exosomes travel very, very well along nerve fibers. So they travel along the vagus nerve up to the brain. And then when they get into the brain, they cause a lot of trouble because it's going to be inflammation, you know, edema, damage to the neurons, and then all kinds of reactions that are reflect nerve damage in the brain. And you see that very clearly in the virus database.
I didn't know this. Folks, you're hearing new information. As far as I know, this is not well known, that the immune cells pick up the capacity to make spike proteins and start making them, and then they go into the immune system, I guess, into the bone marrow, the lymph.
Yes.
They go into bone marrow too?
Bone marrow too, yes. And, I imagine they're doing a real number on the stem cells in the bone marrow.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know about this. I mean, this kind of GMO engineering of human beings is so dangerous. But in this case, the GMO engineering was supposed to be dangerous. It was supposed to stir up the immune system by putting in these toxic, the ability of the body to create toxic protein spikes. By the way, initially at least, the exact spike of SARS-CoV-2 is released from China. So we're talking about the really early potent stages of COVID-19. Tell us more about just what you're finding. I mean, I didn't know this. I didn't know that these immune cells, is this something that most scientists know, or is this?
Well, the literature's there to support it, but you have to dig it out. I mean, they even have talked about it. You know, you kind of piece the puzzle together by reading a number of different papers, in each of which tells some part of the story. And fortunately for me, I have done a lot of studying of Parkinson's disease because, I mean, unfortunately for me, my mother died from Parkinson's disease. And so it was something I was very interested in because I thought, in fact, I could have a genetic predisposition. I've always been concerned about it. And so I wanted to understand how it works. And I already knew before COVID even hit that Parkinson's disease begins in the gut. And it begins in the gut with these prion-like proteins that are produced by pathogens. And so those proteins have the capacity to misfold. And when they misfold, they have the capacity to encourage other human proteins to also misfold in kind of a cascade, like a crystal. Prion diseases are really fascinating.
Explain misfolding.
Yeah, okay. Well, so proteins normally have different, each protein has a certain way that it folds in order to work correctly in its intended use. It's quite a complicated and amazing process, the whole process of protein folding, that is hard to understand how it works, you know, at the molecular level. But there are a number of proteins that fall into this class of being prion-like, there is the prion protein, PRP, the human prion protein, which is the human equivalent of the prion protein that's associated with mad cow disease. Mad cow. Remember mad cow. That's the famous prion disease that people are aware of, where you can get infected, not with a virus or any kind of a living organism, but with a protein. You can have a protein infection that can spread disease. And it's not because that protein copies itself, but it's because it copies its structure. So when another protein is nearby and this protein has misfolded in this strange way, this one picks up on it and misfolds with it. It joins the club. And so it can cause the human proteins to also misfold in this dangerous way that causes these diseases. And there's a number of different neurodegenerative diseases that are linked to various proteins, human proteins, that can misfold in these strange ways, but will do so under the pressure of another foreign protein that might encourage them to become misfolded. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I think people can understand this.
I do like crystalling, a crystal, forming a crystal.
Now, you mentioned also that the human prion protein, and where does that fit? Does that fit into the COVID-19 story? Is it entirely separate story?
I think it does. I've been very interested, and I've been looking at the VAERS database, and I've looked at various symptoms that would be indicative of neurodegenerative diseases, like if it's even something like difficulty swallowing or difficulty with smell, loss of sense of smell. Those are both early symptoms of Parkinson's disease, and both of those show up in large numbers in the COVID-19 VAERS database.
Yes.
And so that's, in fact, inability to smell, loss of a sense of smell. When you look at all the data from 2021, where any vaccine caused a loss of a sense of smell, you find that 99.5% of the cases are COVID-19 vaccines. Almost overwhelmingly, COVID-19 vaccines cause this loss of a sense of smell. But they also cause difficulty swallowing, they cause difficulty with speech, and they cause other kinds of neurological damage, like tinnitus, ringing in the ear.
Yeah.
And Bell's palsy, which is a facial nerve disorder, and even migraine headaches, which are connected to the trigeminal nerve. So all of these nerves inside the brain, where these exosomes have been traveling up and moving around and getting into all those nerves, when they reach that nerve, they release that spike protein and they cause inflammation. And that inflammation causes the symptoms, which is various kind of neurological damage. And we're seeing lots and lots of that in the VAERS database. I looked at a whole bunch of different conditions that are characteristic of vagus nerve damage. The vagus nerve is that big nerve that connects the gut, the liver, the heart, the spleen. It goes to the spleen through the splanchnic nerve. It's an extra nerve, but they connect up. So the whole thing is being spewed out throughout all those nerves, reaching the heart and causing the myocarditis. There's a very strong signal in the VAERS database. I have a note here of 8,000 different reports in the VAERS database just for the 2021 alone connected to COVID-19 disease and various kinds of heart problems like a heart attack or heart failure, myocarditis, all these different conditions of the heart. 8,000 cases that were 98% of all the cases reported related to heart for any vaccine. So out of all the vaccines that were delivered in 2021, 2% of the cases relating to heart problems were from all the other vaccines, including the flu vaccine, the MR vaccine, all the other ones, 2%. 98% were COVID-19 vaccines. There's a huge signal of reactive, very dangerous reactions to the COVID-19 vaccine in the VAERS database, despite the fact that many people don't report. And in fact, I had a very short segment on Fox News, maybe 3 minutes long, where I talked about this vagus nerve, exosomes, vagus nerve, neurological damage. And as a consequence of that show, I got over a dozen emails from various people sharing with me the story of their loved one.
Right.
And more than half of them had to do with Parkinson's disease. And it was, almost all of them were, some of them were like, they didn't have any Parkinson's, they got the vaccine, they got diagnosed with Parkinson's. Within 8 months, they were in a wheelchair, this kind of thing. Other ones where they already had Parkinson's, they got the vaccine, the Parkinson's got much worse. And I asked every one of them, did you report this in VAERS? And none of them did. So, I mean, the signal there is far, far less.
Very, very sure.
Because people don't think, oh, my Parkinson's is getting worse. They don't, oh my God, I got that vaccine. Maybe that has something to do with it. They don't think that. They don't think it's possible.
Yeah.
So they don't report it, not just because they're lazy, but because they don't know.
It's very important, folks, to understand that probably 10 or 15 different clusters of reports, any one of them in the past would have caused the FDA, CDC to withdraw the vaccine from circulation. So we now have vaccines that are producing multiple kinds of adverse effects, including death, all of them, and you know, as the doctor's describing, 99% from COVID disease, and also the COVID vaccines, and because they're so similar. And,
the vaccine is worse than the disease, I think, in this respect, yeah. Because of the fact that it's bypassed all those initial barriers, yeah. And because it has this very strange version of RNA that's extremely well designed. As I said, it doesn't look like viral RNA, but also very sturdy. They figured out how to manipulate the RNA to keep it from getting broken down, because they were so concerned that that it would be torn to shreds before it ever got a chance to make protein, and then you wouldn't get the antibodies that they were looking for. So they figured out how to change the RNA to make it very not natural, yeah. In such a way that it's very difficult for the cell to break it down. And I was absolutely shocked when I read recently, there was a new paper that came out recently where they looked at the lymph nodes, you know, where the vaccine is administered, the lymph nodes. They took samples, and they found both the messenger RNA and the protein in those lymph nodes up to 60 days after the vaccine was delivered.
That's important, yeah.
And they stopped looking at 60 days. It wasn't like they no longer found it. They stopped looking. So how long does it last? You know, and it continues that whole time making protein, because it's been designed to not be able to be turned off. That's another part of the design. They were so obsessed with making sure that they'd get an antibody response that they went overboard with it. Yeah. And they designed it to make a spike fast as well. And that means it makes errors. So these are different versions of the spike protein with various mutations in them.
We have 1 minute left. I want to just, first of all, oh God, Dr. Senef, Stephanie Senef from MIT, folks, an honor for us to be able to listen to her. I want to remind everybody that this extraordinary event has never been allowed to happen before in medicine. Get our book, COVID-19, The Global Predators. It gives you the basis, the foundation, the deepest dive. Bobby Kennedy himself, RFK, said that this book is the deepest dive into what he called the criminal conspiracy behind all this, which is this vast array of global predators who are also active in what's going on in the Ukraine. This is a book much more about the whole world order that is evolving than just about COVID-19. So in 5 seconds left, I am just honored to have you on the show. Ginger is honored to have you on the show. Stephanie Senef, thank you.